Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Want to be in touch with the show? What you got to do? You got to text me, and we will respond to the best of our ability. Still to come on the program, April Marie Fogle from Alabama Today and other places. So stay tuned for that. But we got her here a little early. We'll go ahead and get her in and get her talking from Loxley, right? State Representative Donna Givens joins us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be with you this morning.
Hey, thanks for coming by. We do appreciate it. You look like you've had some good night's sleep here. Recovery. We're a week out from sunny die. How you feeling?
Great. And you're right. I have slept like a baby. Glad to be home. Glad to have session over and glad to be back in the district, meeting with people. Of course, I've not taken any time off. I'm meeting with people at least one a day and just back in the district and glad to be home back in the district.
Well, two years in. And obviously that first year was much, much different than, it was get to know you orientation, sort of like figure out where you're offices year, and now the second year, Representative, different than anything I have seen. And I have some institutional knowledge. I wouldn't call myself like an expert on the legislature, but I look at it. There were a lot of times we were sitting on the edge of our seats, not really knowing what was going to happen.
Very true. It was different. And I'm like you, I'm certainly no expert. It is my second year. I've been in Montgomery in and out for 20 years, but I was in the lobby. I was in the gallery and watching to see what bills passed and trying to prevent or help get a bill passed. It's so different when you're sitting out on the floor. But it was a very busy session, a very stressful session. We got a lot done, and it was different than anything I've been in before.
Well, and watching it, I guess you remember during Speaker McCutcheon's time, you saw two different leadership styles in Ledbetter and McCutcheon, and this year it feels like it is now, like it is the Ledbetter era in the House of Representatives, because it's not like there's a particular, like, ideological brand or anything, but we start on time. This is the way we're going to do things. This is what I want to see. This is, and so, like, things are really, like, more, you do feel it now. You've sensed the change and the transition that it's his house.
It is, and I'll have to tell you, last year, I was so amazed how much time he took with a freshman to explain it, go step by step for us, and to make sure that we really were doing the job we were elected to do, representing the people. And you're right. He starts on time. And I have thoroughly enjoyed working with him and getting to know him better. I knew him. But, when you work with someone, especially in this environment, you get to know them better. And I can say one thing. He stands behind his people. And I've always thought that shows good leadership. And I complimented him there at the end, and thanked him for backing his people. Now, it's not to say that if he disagrees with you, he'll let you know, as any good leader should. But I have a lot of respect for him, and it is the Ledbetter era, and I just admire what he's done and how he pulls us all together. I've been there when at the end of session, House members weren't speaking to House members. And that was not the case. He kept us together, and not saying we all agreed on the same thing, a lot of controversial issues.
Right.
But he kept us together.
Well, I tell you, it's like, kind of watching it, it's interesting to me. You're right. The House seems to be working more than it ever has. It's reflected in not just the votes. The votes certainly show that, but it does. It's created this kind of weird House versus Senate dynamic, maybe not intentionally, but you do seem to be working together more as a chamber. And this includes like crossing party lines, and the Democrats seem to be more kind of on board with the program.
Absolutely. When you have Democrats stand up at the microphone, at the well, we call it, and praise the speaker, then you know he's doing it right. And we had that. I witnessed it. I saw that. And they loved the leadership that they saw. They let it be known. And we had more bipartisan votes again this year. Started last year, and I was happy to say it continued this year. And you get a lot done when it's like that. And we passed a lot of bills this year.
Because I noticed this, too, that, like, whenever there was, I think I keep using the House versus the Senate, but when the Democrats got a little sideways with some of the Democrats upstairs, Ledbetter had their back then, too, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that makes you feel good, and it makes you dig in, work harder, when you know that someone's there with you and has your back, and Ledbetter does, and he lets it be known. It doesn't matter if it's an R behind your name or a D. It's a body.
And it's a change. I mean, you've never seen anything like that really before, but, like, well, they're like talk about kind of like the trends in the House of Representatives. You got to remember that, like, Republicans didn't get the majority until 2010. Before that, all the way back to Reconstruction,
right,
it was a Democrat. So, like, and Democrats certainly had their kind of ebbs and flows too. But under this new Republican one-party state, and now with like what's going on in Washington D.C. and people like trying to like make these like analogies of Capitol Hill to the Alabama legislature just doesn't work. It's just not that. It's totally, totally different.
Absolutely. There's no comparison whatsoever. It would be nerve-wracking in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Because you can't get the group together, the Republicans together or the Democrats together. And they certainly do not work across party lines like we do at the State House.
Right. Well, it's been fascinating to watch. So that continues to be we'll see how it plays out these last 2 years of this quadrennium and then beyond that. I mean, you know, who knows how things go. Well, let me ask you this. And now that like gambling is, I think, going to be behind us for at least a couple of years, if not more, what are you looking at like these next 2 years? What do you think it looks like? What do you think the big thing's going to be, if anything? Do you expect it? Because we kind of hit a peak, right, with this year. Is the intensity level kind of drop a little? Do you think that's kind of going to be the hope there, especially heading into 26?
I do think the gambling bill, gaming, however you want to reference it, will not come up in the next couple of years. I think it'll be a new quadrennium before anyone even has a desire to discuss it or talk about it.
Right.
You know, it really, we worked hard on it. Anyway, I think you'll see a lot more focus on workforce development. We are still, you know, we're workforce, we need so much in the workforce. We're doing a lot of things, but there's a lot yet to be done. And I think that'll be one of our main topics because we've got to keep our businesses going. We can't continue to let business have to close on Monday and Tuesday and, you know, Sunday, Monday and Tuesday because lack of employees.
Yeah.
And, you know, even with our sheriff's department, they need deputies and your police departments. I mean, it's affecting everyone. It's not just service industry jobs.
We see it in the service industry because we do service. I mean, like your fast food restaurant having to close the dining room because they can't staff it.
Right, right. And it's not just here in Baldwin County. It's throughout the entire state.
Right. We saw the same thing. I mean, you know, driving around the state, Huntsville South. I mean, it really, it was like this incentive to work or just like people getting back in the, you know, in the regular sort of post-COVID or what I guess would have been pre-COVID activities. And it took a while to get that going.
It did. And we're still not back totally. We're not back where we need to be with workforce. And we're doing major things, I feel like, and we're certainly working on what we have done studies and termed was things that needed to be handled to put people back to work, like daycare issues and transportation issues. And, of course, housing, you know, is right. a big issue, not just in Baldwin County, but over the entire state. And I know there's people that work on this daily, but I look for that to be another big topic for next session. I certainly don't think you'll hear gaming in the halls at all, which I welcome. And I think you will see more down to real life issues that we've got to get focused on and make some definite changes.
The gaming stuff's going to take a little while, maybe not long, but there's got to be some wounds that heal there. I mean, that got contentious in a hurry.
It did, right there at the end. I mean, throughout the whole time, you know, there were the yeses and the noes, and I respect anyone's decision. It's their, that's what they're elected for, is to represent their people. And that's what I know I tried to do, and I think everyone else, was represent your people. May not have been what you agreed with, but you're representing your delegation, your district, rather. And there were probably some that felt like, you know, their yes vote or their no vote had cost them maybe a few unpleasant conversations, maybe with some fellow, you know, House members or Senate members, whatever. But for the most part, the House stayed together. And I know everyone's probably like me. They're glad to not be discussing gaming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and we've discussed it ad nauseum here, you know, on the show, but the aftermath is something you can't help it to escape. But like, I had seen it this way, maybe. I keep bringing up the BP oil spill, but that was like different divisions there. And then that executive amendment, when they came back for like a few hours after COVID and they kind of passed the budgets real quick, and there was a little bit of tension there. So it's not like, and there's a lot of veteran lawmakers, so it's not anything that's unusual that you would have this sort of a schism or whatever you want to call it, but it always sort of comes back and reunites, and the system works like it's supposed to.
Absolutely. Every time, every year at the end of session, there's always some tension about something. And this session, of course, was no different. But, you know, everybody's back to checking on each other and staying in touch. And like I said, attending meetings and different things of us together. And so we'll start the next session. Everybody glad to see each other again.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I guess what I'm kind of amazed at, just your interactions with the Senate and being in the same building, and at times, I mean, it did feel like two separate worlds. Like, you got your thing going on downstairs, they got their thing going on, and probably, what, gambling ethics and all of the big, like, hot buttons of this session, you never could, that divide was never fully bridged. But then on the other hand, you got, like, school choice, like who would ever thought, you know, and some other big things. But like, that had to be like, it felt like they got done early because a lot of things were kind of moving way, way before the session.
Right. And there was some contention, you know, everybody knows it. Everybody's seen it on the news and read it in the news articles. There was some between the House and the Senate. But I think, you know, once we go back in session, everything's back. It's new again. It's ready to go again. I'm fortunate that I have friends in the Senate, and I know everyone does, and everyone feels that they're fortunate. Doesn't mean we always agree with each other, but I did not have too much trouble with bills, of my bills being passed out of the Senate. Some were held up, but I was able to just go on the Senate floor and talk to them, and I love that. I love that opportunity and that camaraderie that we have. And not all bills worked that way.
No, it doesn't, but that's the legislative process. Let's get a break in here. We're joined by State Representative Donna Gibbons here. We're going to keep her here for a little bit, probably for the hour. 251-343-0106. That's the text line to say get in touch with the program. If you got anything you want to ask, but we'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Right up. Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T. Sitting here at the Floribam, about to open up a big old can. Good times, unwind, falling and out of love in the same night. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at the Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Thursday morning. Silicon Valley from Marie Fogel. Get her a day early because we had to move the schedule around. We'll just give you a heads up. We got our usual Todd Stacey, Chris Elliott, but also Teddy Governor Will Ainsworth is going to be with us tomorrow. So please tune in for that. But still with us now, always a pleasure to have our fellow Baldwin County in the area, State Representative Donna Givens in studio at the Fairhope Bureau. Representative, we're going to get into this more in the next segment. I want to talk about your bills and just let your constituents know, you know, sort of what you were working on specifically. But we were talking about, you know, sort of these labor shortages and this workforce development stuff. I mean, some of it, you know, it will benefit more around the state than here. But, you know, you look at like the new Novacell, the new
Academy in Locksley.
Yeah. Academy. And then you got a lot of things that are going to sort of help the labor shortage situation here, especially Baldwin County that we're facing.
Yes, I'm so excited about the Preparatory Academy in Locksley, and I may be calling it the wrong name, but it's for kids from 9th through 12th grade, and they will learn a trade. And I know Airbus, Austal, different businesses are participating in that. And of course, you know, from dental hygienists to whatever. And I'm so excited about that. And yes, that prepares the kids to be workforce ready.
We're going through Baldwin County's growing, and that's great, but there's like some real growing pains where all these services that you take for granted, right, that you just assume are there. Well, you're starting to show a little bit of shortages and to be a waiting list. And it's not just the service industry, but it's all these like kind of essential things we need in our day to day lives.
Absolutely. And schools like the one we're talking about in Locksley helps prepare our young people, our workforce. I was on the field for Robertsdale High School's graduation Monday night. Amazing listening to the young people that were graduating, a large group, 300 and something students. Actually, it was Tuesday night. And so sitting there when I was listening to their name called and them receiving their diploma, you know, my thoughts were, what are you going to do? And I know a lot of them are headed to college, but a lot of them are headed to work. They're headed to some type of trade. And it was just great to see that many young people out there. Of course, all of the schools are experiencing that with graduation this year. I just hope that our young people go to the, to work here in the state of Alabama. I don't want to lose them. Of course, I don't want to be selfish. I want them to have great careers and great jobs and do all that they can do and be all that they can be. But I love the fact that we're preparing them here at home for jobs that are needed here in our state.
Well, and that is like, I don't know, just like we were so focused on college prep when I was in high school. It was just forever ago. But you start to see that transition now that it's probably behooves us to look at a different direction.
Right. Yeah. Career ready.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll pick it up on the other side. We'll talk more specifically about some of the bills. Representative Givens has got through something that I really want to get to, this baby box stuff and more. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will...
to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Thursday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Hit us up. We will get to your text here in the next segment or two. So I do appreciate the feedback. April Roy Fogle in the 11 o'clock hour is still with us. State Representative Donna Gibbons of Loxley here in the studio, Farrell, Baldwin County. And so, yeah, I think a productive session, particularly this. Let's start off with the baby box bill. Now, I know these ladies are kids to love, and they really, really were excited about this particular piece of legislation, but you spearheaded it. Kind of walk us through the process and how that came to be. And I mean, we're already seeing results here.
Absolutely. I was in a dinner in Mobile, and I heard the attorney general from Mississippi speak, and she talked about that and said Mississippi was the 11th state to adopt this. And so I thought Alabama needs this, and we need to be number 12. So I talked with her afterwards. She sent me her bill. I carried the bill to LSA, you know, the process. Talked to the governor. The governor thought it was a great idea. Talked to Speaker Ledbetter. He thought it was a great idea. And so there it began. And all of the Baldwin delegation quickly understood it, bought into it. You know, Mobile, this passed with unanimous support. I mean, it was just a bill that no one could be against. Now, we did a lot of work. We sat down with a lot of groups, and a learning process for me, but I learned, you know, get everybody at the table and let's work on this. Let's get it ironed out. Let's make it happen. And that's what we did. So it was, certainly a group effort, as all bills are, and then passed with the Senate. Now, the box that was installed in Madison, Alabama, was just a day or so old of being a week old, you know, like a week and a day.
Right.
And the first baby was placed there. And then a couple of weeks later, the second baby was placed there. So, and this is of no cost to the state. This was done with a private donor. And so it was no cost to the state. And it's not growing government, you know, which I'm not trying to do. It's not growing government. And it was no cost to the taxpayers. But we're saving lives. And that was the most amazing part to me. Now, when I got to see the first one that I got to see installed, it was actually the second baby box. It was a very emotional for me to see this and to just know how many lives will be touched by this. And I've had firemen send me pictures, because in other states, they've adopted the baby, that they were the firemen that actually answered the little buzzer when the baby was placed in there. So I've had firemen send me pictures. And it is a bill that just keeps on giving.
Well, and I'm glad to hear that. It just shows that this is something. But what are the hiccups? And there's some municipalities out there that, I think, like City of Gadsden or maybe the City of Huntsville, they're still a little timid about this and the liabilities. Talk about that. Like, why should these municipalities not be so worried about having this option out there?
I think, and this is just my assumption only, that maybe they don't want to think, oh, it happens in our city, and they don't want to give their city a black eye. But let me tell you, it happens everywhere. It happens all over the state. And most of the cities, like I had Foley was not, Baldwin County was not on the list of the top 10, of the 10 that were receiving a box. And the city of Foley, the fire department contacted me, and they wanted a box. Well, they're getting a box. Mobile wanted three. So it's not, you have those that feel like, I guess they feel like it's a black eye, and they don't want to say their city does stuff like this. In reality, it happens. And then you have those cities that want it, can't get enough of them, because they want to make sure they reach all areas.
Right. Well, I wonder. I can't help but wonder. This is gross speculation on my part, but like, they don't like the abortion ban, and this is seen as some way to kind of
take a pro-life side and not to, you know what I mean? It's like the politics of abortion sort of get into this discussion, but in reality, what you were trying to do, I mean, we want to be a pro-life state, so we got to do these pro-life things, right?
Absolutely, and that was one of the things that helped me with this, because we are a pro-life state, and I'm very thankful for that. I know Governor Ivey is very proud to say that Alabama is a pro-life state. So my thoughts were, well, then we need the next step. We need to take the next step, and I felt like this was it. And I've had just so many people that came forward and were so complimentary of this bill because they knew it was saving lives.
The other bill you got, this let's talk about human trafficking, and this one got a lot of attention throughout the session this year. Maybe didn't happen quite as fast, but there was a little bit of a sales pitch that needed to happen there. Walk us through that, too.
Okay. And that I am very proud about this bill, and it is another bill that keeps on giving. I had lunch with a man from Fairhope yesterday, and he is so excited about this bill and is wanting to do amazing things to help these children once they are rescued. So this is another one that I think you're going to see a lot of great things come from it. I've always been an overcautious mother, overprotective, an overprotective grandmother. You know, I need to see the children. I need to know that they're okay. I'm not one that can drop them off at a mall or a park. So when the movie came out, and I carried two of my grandchildren to see the movie along with me, and so I knew then what I was going to do. Of course, I started meeting with the people, and Aaliyah helped me a lot with this bill because there was something that I did not think of, and certainly I don't know their laws and everything about it, but in the up until this new law, you had to have exchanged something of value, exchanged money or exchanged drugs or whatever the agreement was before they actually could charge them. With the new law, as long as the intent is there, they've got the money, they've got the drugs, they've got, as some of the officers told me, even like a really nice purse that, you know, or just a night in a hotel. So they, with the intent to exchange, because I started working with Covenant Rescue Group.
Right.
This group out of Birmingham, phenomenal group, phenomenal people.
That's a Jared Hudson group.
Jared Hudson, yes. Yeah. And I can't spend enough time with them and learn enough about this. But they were so pleased that this was changed, and it was an amendment by Aaliyah. So the intent, because as Jared said, you know, we can kick in a hotel room door, and the monetary value could not have been exchanged yet, and so we can't charge them, but with the law now. And then also something that I had not thought of, and it was really heartbreaking, but I'm glad to hear it, that it will affect, this is not something I had thought of. As the Aaliyah explained to me, daddies, stepdaddies, grandparents, uncles, brothers said, you don't know what you have done, family, friends, to save some of these little girls' lives because of what would be happening to them. But now they know they will get life in prison. And that's what the sentence is. And it's the toughest penalty in the nation. And I am so proud to say Alabama is number one in that. So, but they said that would make someone stop and think, you know, if I get caught, it is life in prison. And that's exactly my hope is, you know, they think about it and they, you know, Alabama becomes one of the leading states for it not to be happening in our state.
Well, I think we really see it. I mean, it's just a lot of pass-through traffic, right? Like, you know, especially down our way, I-10. Coast to coast, but I know in the northern part of the state, that's what I was always told.
Yeah, and I have been told I-10 is the corridor, you know, so I want them to go around I-10,
right,
around the state of Alabama, stay out of Alabama, And another thing that I'm going to be working with Covenant Rescue Group, as I said, this is the bill that just is blessed and it keeps on giving. They are going to be training bus drivers, cafeteria workers, custodians, anyone in the school system what to look for. And this is going to be every school in the state of Alabama, what to look for. So if they see a child that is showing any signs of this, then they would turn it into the authorities. And that's huge. And they will be coming to Baldwin County as well as throughout the state, but training law personnel. And the young ladies with the group are going to be coming to Baldwin County, just like we did the fraud and all that, and hosted these and had them at breakfast, lunch, and dinner hour, and provided a sandwich or a meal. We're going to be doing that same thing with the trafficking. So these young ladies will be coming to Baldwin County, and I just hope everyone turns out and hears this and learns, because I certainly have learned a lot, and I know I'm just getting started.
Well, on human trafficking itself, like you mentioned, it's drugs or property or things of value, but like that whole, it's probably foreign to a lot of our listeners, like that whole enterprise, like what are they, what happens here? Kind of, if you understand it, I kind of do, but like, how does this become a thing at all?
Well, I've learned there's all these websites, and so some of these, and they target the homeless, the young girls that have a very bad home life, runaways. These are your targets. And there's websites that they get on, these predators looking for young ladies or young girls. And the age now is 14 and up. Well, the gentleman that I had lunch with yesterday has been doing a lot of work on this, and he talked to a group where they had six-month-old babies that were sold into sex slavery. Six months old. And I know you have a newborn. Uh-huh. Can you imagine that? So,
what kind of person does that?
Exactly. Well, and it's big money. It's big money when you get into...
It's a devaluation of like human life. Like, you know, it's just dollars and cents or whatever.
Exactly. No reference to human life whatsoever. You're right. It's dollars that promote this, and it's dollars that keeps these groups going. And that's what I'm hoping, you know, one bite at a time, one step by step, that we alleviate this in Alabama. And I hope other states follow suit.
6 month old baby. Like what, I mean, like what is the black market? You know, that's so, I don't even know where to start with that.
I know it, my mouth fell open, and he told me, he said, that's exactly what happened to me when I was meeting with this group and was told that. And it was a young lady that had escaped, that is, you know, that he was able to contact people from this, and that's how he made the connection. And so she's, you know, working, I guess, to help other children.
Well, how widespread, I mean, is, because, you know, we go about our day-to-day life and we go to, you know, Walmart or Publix or whatever. And it, the perception to me is, based on what I'm hearing, that this is just right underneath our nose, or we can't see it with our own eyes, but it's much more prevalent and out there than we realize.
Right. It is. And I learned that too. They said, you can think it's not happening in your county, but it is. Now, how much of the actually, you know, kidnapping the children and taking them to other states, I don't know. But as I started in this, Jeff, I learned, when you talk about human trafficking, it's not just the abduction of a child and selling them into slavery, but it's also the child at home that's being, you know, sexually molested. It's the neighbor girl that this is happening to. So it really opened my eyes, because I was focusing on the abduction for human trafficking. But now I know, when you say human trafficking, it is a whole gamut of, and like I said, the little girl at home or the little boy. It happens to boys too. And so it's not always just abducting the child. It comes in many forms. It wears many different hats. And that's what this bill covers, all those different hats.
Do you, the implementation of the bill, do you feel good about where prosecutors, law enforcement are so that they are better able to combat this?
Absolutely. The DA Association spent time with me also on this bill and was able to get an amendment to for the bill. And yes, I worked with all the proper authorities with this in Montgomery, and they're very pleased with this bill, very happy that this bill passed. And I know the governor was delighted to sign it. This was another bill that she was so happy to see happen here in the state of Alabama.
Representative, we'll leave it there. Thanks for making time for us and coming by. We'll do it again soon.
Let's do. Enjoyed it, always.
All right. State Representative Donnie Givens there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
The Cadillac can. He said some things just glitter and shine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. Unnamed texter, did John Wall ever get prosecuted for voter fraud? Wasn't it an ID issue? And voter fraud is when you're voting or you're co-opting the ballot system. And his issue was identification, which is not voter fraud. It's a different scope there. So, no, he took issue with the ID situation, and I think it was a matter of interpretation. So it's a bit of a stretch to conflate that with voter fraud. Tim, Jeff is always good to have a little something in the glove box in case you find yourself in a situation that you need to hold someone there until the police arrive. Maybe. I would think it'd be more have a little something in the glove box for self-defense. Personally, that's my preference. Not that. Sure. Josh, liberal symbolism is ignorant. Confederate flag hangs downtown at least two places liberals don't even know. They only know the Confederate battle flag. Do liberals hate the Dukes of Hazzard that much? You're right, because the Confederate battle flag versus the flag that would fly over the Confederate Capitol or whatever in Montgomery during the Civil War, right? They were different. There were different flags in the Confederacy, and the battle flag was the one on the battlefields. It's a feel good sort of like virtue signaling exercise that did won the day over the Confederate flag, which should itself just be a harmless symbol of like in the past. And it's not. It represents something in the eyes of other people that they've invented. It's like when you want to demagogue something, you gotta find a symbol for it and make it so political. And it's funny how this changed in Alabama where 20 years ago there used to be kind of a defense of the Confederate flag. in these southern states. And then here in the last 5 years, Nikki Haley, like in South Carolina, you know, like that was seen as like a positive, even in South Carolina. It's funny to watch how that's changed, but what do you make of that? I don't know. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Carry on, sweet southern comfort, carry on.